Tonight on Arena, celebrating 75 years of C.S. Lewis's The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, and soprano Laura Ahern sings the musics of Gounod and Dvorak. #51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. It's a classic story which pits good against evil in a land of perpetual winter, accessed only through a dusty closet. I am, of course, talking about The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, written by C.S. Lewis, who was born in Belfast in 1898. The book celebrates its 75th birthday this year, and so far 85 million copies have been sold. Many adaptations have been made of this classic text on screens big and small, but in 2022, an ambitious stage production opened in London's West End, using puppetry and original songs to tell this wonderful tale of plucky children, good versus evil, fauns, and of course, you can't forget the Turkish delight. The touring production of this adaptation of The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe is currently on at Bord Gáis Energy Theatre in Dublin and will be running through until Saturday the 10th of May. Delighted to be joined by producer Chris Harper, who has been part of the team that have brought this novel to the stage. Chris, great to have you with us this evening. You approached the C.S. Lewis estate yourself about bringing this particular novel to the stage. What was it about this little part of the Narnia Chronicles and this specific C.S. Lewis book that made you want to get it up there for people to see on the theatrical, in a theatrical space?
Well, thank you. Firstly, thank you for having me, and what a brilliant introduction to the play. I mean, I fell in love, like most people, with the book when I was a kid, and then saw the various adaptations of it on television, and as a theatre producer, you want to try and find something that is inherently theatrical. And I just think there's something incredibly theatrical about the idea of going through a wardrobe into a magical world. And you can do things in the theatre that you just simply wouldn't be able to do on screen, in that you have to suspend belief and you have to go on an adventure in your mind as well as an adventure in the theatre. And I think the invitation of taking you on an adventure through a wardrobe is just so compelling, and I love the book. And so I approached the estate almost 10 years ago now and said, would they allow me to do a stage version of it? So I was part of the producing team of at the National Theatre of a play called War Horse. And what was so brilliant about War Horse is it's a play that was for young adults, and I think that world is really exciting for theatre. I think, you know, to go and see something when you're a teenager is really compelling, and hopefully that will, doing shows that are for young adults will help create a generation of theatre goers now and in the future. So it's the kind of thing I'm attracted to.
Indeed, yeah. That Michael Morpurgo, his modern classic War Horse for the National Theatre, which has, I think, toured to Dublin here as well, because I saw it with its groundbreaking puppetry, which is similar to, I think, of the way you've approached things in terms of The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe.
And in fact, the person who did the puppets for us, I got to know through War Horse. He was the original Joey in War Horse. And so when we came to do it, and he now has his own puppet company, and I approached him to make the lion for us. And it's an incredible, huge, gigantic puppet, not unlike Joey in War Horse, actually.
But there is an added effect, I think, to the way you've presented Aslan, the big lion, for us in this production, which is the presence not only of the puppeteers and this giant puppet, but the presence of an actor who's... I think I remember seeing this at one point in Dublin as well, who's dressed in a lion-like coat, but who's also speaking these wonderful words out to us.
Yes. I mean, the way we look at the actor who plays... So there are actually two versions of Aslan. There's the puppet and then the actor who plays him. So we see the puppet is really the spirit animal, and the actor plays the voice of the puppet, and the two things sit side by side. So one represents the soul of the other. So, yeah, again, it helps bring a theatricality to it, which is what I think is most exciting about when I see the show. So, yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and there is obviously lots of theatricality once we get into that, particularly when we get into that magical world. But I was struck as well, you really firmly set this adaptation in its wartime setting, or in a wartime setting, rather, I should say, because that's where these four children, Lucy, Susan, Edmund and Peter, this is why they were heading up the country in England as it was at the time when the story is told.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all about, you know, how, I mean, I think the book itself, you know, this C.S. Lewis was inspired to write it after his own experience of living through the war. And so, you know, I think set these children on an adventure, you know, that was based on the kind of trauma they'd experienced having been separated from their families. And, you know, sadly, that is still what happens all over the world. You know, there are tens of thousands of kids separated from their families because of war. So, you know, sadly, it still feels in many ways current for some people all over the world. So, you know, I think, you know, kids imagining this world to escape from the traumas of, you know, that kind of experience, I think was sort of where he was coming from.
And as you said earlier on, this idea of a magical wardrobe that you step inside, and when you step inside and close the door, off you go into a totally different world. Let's have a listen to a scene from the production, in fact, which is a famous scene, of course, from the story. This is Kudzai Mangombe as Lucy, and she's just gone through the wardrobe. And the first Narnian that she encounters is, of course, the Faun, Mr. Tumnus, played here by Alfie Richards.
Good evening.
Good evening, good evening. Excuse me. Am I right in thinking that you are a daughter of Eve?
My name's Lucy.
But you are, forgive me, what they call a girl.
Of course I'm a girl.
So, to be quite clear, you are, in fact, human.
Of course I'm human.
How stupid of me. I've never met a human before. I am delighted. That is to say, delighted. Oh, allow me to introduce myself. My name is Tumnus.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Tumnus.
May I ask, daughter of Eve, how you have come to Narnia?
Narnia? What's Narnia?
All that lies between the lamppost and the great palace of Caer Paravel on the eastern sea. Was it through the wild woods of the west?
I came through the wardrobe in the spare room.
If only I'd worked harder at geography when I was a little fawn, I would no doubt know more about these strange countries.
There we go. Kudzai Mangombe as Lucy and Alfie Richards as Mr. Tumnus. And not believing a word of what she's saying about coming through a wardrobe, or at least not being able to place that wardrobe. But within that clip, I'm speaking this evening with Chris Harper, one of the producers of The Lion, the Witch and the World, which is currently running at the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre in Dublin. And one of the lines that struck me as I listened to it is daughter of Eve, as he refers to Lucy there, Mr. Tumnus does. The religious overtones, or the religious undertones, perhaps they should be called, in terms of this work, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. Obviously, there's often been this reference that Aslan is a representation in some ways of the Christ figure. How do those religious aspects of things fit into a contemporary production, Chris?
Well, you know, what we've done is, you know, we've been very faithful to the book because the book is such a brilliant piece of literature. I mean, as you said in the introduction, 85 million copies of the book have been sold. So what we wanted to do was be genuinely faithful to the work of C.S. Lewis. And the fact that we're celebrating the 75th anniversary of the novel is just a testament to how current and how important this is as a piece of literature. And absolutely, we kind of follow exactly exactly the story that he set out. And, you know, yes, you know, of course, you know, lots of people will recognize that in some ways it's a version of the resurrection line, the Witch in the Wardrobe. Mm. And Aslan represents, you know, all those really religious aspects. So we've been very faithful to it. And I think that is an important thing when you're doing a classic novel, that you actually give people what it is they want from that story. And, you know, we've been breaking box office records all over the country in England. And, you know, we're doing, it's fantastic. You know, listen, the Bord Gáis is one of the best theatres that we ever tour to. I love it when we bring shows there. We took Warhorse there some years ago. And this is the second time we've brought Lion, the Witch, the Wardrobe to Dublin.
Yeah. And it's indeed, you also had your adaptation of The Curious Incident in the Dog in the Nighttime. You brought that here. And in terms of the kind of reactions then that you're seeing from 21st century children to the production, does the story still hold it, whatever that magic is that I suppose entranced all of us as children?
Well, I think we all love a story of good versus evil, and good winning over evil is always going to be timeless. And I think, you know, the fact that the White Witch ultimately gets defeated is the kind of story that we all enjoy, whether we're 60 or what, it's a timeless story, good versus evil. I think, you know, many years after we're gone, stories are still going to be being told.
Thanks very much for speaking to us this evening, Chris.
Thank you for having me.
And that was Chris Harper. The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe is, as I said, at the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre now. It opened last night, in fact. It runs through until Saturday, May the 10th, and tickets are available on ticketmaster.ie. Now, this visit, I suppose, of The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, we could refer to it as a kind of homecoming, because C.S. Lewis is one of our most successful writers, but we are sometimes in danger of forgetting that fact, I think. Joining me on the line is writer, journalist and critic Sarah Keating. Sarah, why is it the case that we forget sometimes that C.S. Lewis is one of our greatest writers?
Well, he did spend most of his life in England. Mm. And he was writing, you know, at the kind of vanguard of a new wave of British literature, you know, writing alongside people like J.R.R. Tolkien. And I suppose the fact that he spent so much of his life away from Ireland is probably a big part of the fact that his work has been forgotten. It was so interesting, or his connection to Ireland may have been forgotten. And it was so interesting. I was at the theatre last night to see the wonderful production, which in many ways leans into a sort of a British folk tradition. You know, they use these incredible folk musicians, the kind of Scottish aspect of the journey that the children make is very present in it. Mm. However, C.S. Lewis, when he spoke about his influences for writing the Chronicles of Narnia, it was really the Irish landscape that he spoke about.
Absolutely. And how strong he was, I know it was, he lived here, I think it was until the age of nine, he lived in Ireland, that is, until the age of nine. But that Irish identity and that those first 9 years of his life seem to have had an enormous effect on his literary imagination.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was 52 when The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe was published. Mm. So he'd already written more than 10 academic titles. He'd written 6 works of fiction, including the Screwtape Letters. And many of those works, both the academic, like so both the nonfiction and the fiction, did kind of really focus on, I suppose, his Christian beliefs and a kind of making theological arguments. But when he started writing The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, he returned to his own childhood to kind of get into that childhood space. And I suppose Chris was talking about how, you know, his experiences of watching wartime Britain, you know, particularly he was writing, you know, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe was published at the end of the Second World War. But he himself was somebody who, you know, was exiled from his family. He was sent to boarding school after the death of his mother, boarding school in England. So he returned briefly to the family home, but then he returned to England again to a different boarding school. So that sense of kind of lostness of a child, you know, trying to, you know, find a way of dealing with that loss of his mother, that loss of his family and the family connection, you know, by being sent to this strange world, is something that really would have resonated with him.
You can see the parallels in terms of just children like fish out of water. He was clearly felt like that. But what about those early years? What kind of home did he grow up in? They moved to Cork first, I think, the family, but eventually it was to Belfast, that or near Belfast, that they settled.
Yeah, so he was living in a big kind of capacious house called Little Lee in East Belfast. You know, it's difficult to imagine what it must have been like then, but there was, you know, large grounds around it. And from High Point, you could see out to Belfast Lough. It was a big house in which he spoke about being able to get lost, and also particularly getting lost both in, you know, hiding within the library, but also getting lost in his father's large library of mythological literature. Some of that would have been Norse literature, but a lot of it would also have been Irish literature. And his first kind of real interest in the 1920s were actually in the Celtic Revival movement. He was really interested in Yeats. He met him twice and was very taken with his poetry. So there was all of this kind of brewing within him before his kind of born again Christianity and his kind of more academic interests and took over.
And the nature of the household in which he grew up. His father was a Welsh boilermaker who emigrated to Cork, as I say, first in the 1850s, and then they moved to Dublin. And he married his C.S. Lewis's dad, Richard Lewis, that is. He married an Irish woman. What was the nature of that household politically and in terms of religion?
In terms of... I'm kind of not really equipped to kind of deal with the religious aspect of that, I suppose.
But he did grow up in a family in Belfast where home rule was at least being discussed. I don't think they were the typical plantation family in that respect.
No, I don't believe so. It's funny, when he moved to England, he wrote much in his later life about that, you know, how difficult he found it to acclimatize to the culture there, from the accents to the different social strata to the even the landscape itself, which he, you know, which he spoke about. So that kind of tension, I think, at that particular time, and then, you know, which he kind of followed through by his interest in the Celtic revival movement, was definitely kind of shaping his early imagination.
Yeah, and I was referring to, actually I was wrong there when I said it was his father who was the Welsh boilermaker. It was his paternal grandfather, in fact, who was the Welsh boilermaker. Sorry for throwing that sideways at you, wondering who's he talking about there. But Lewis himself did manage, I think, even after he left Ireland, the Mourne Mountains were hugely important to him.
Yes, they were. His housekeeper in Oxford was Irish, and through a connection with her, I think it may have been his, her goddaughter, ran a boarding house in Annagassan in County Louth, which I believe was actually three railway carriages on a kind of with a coastal aspect, which are no longer there. But he returned there every summer, and throughout the 1940s, it was a real kind of... because of that family, because of that connection through his housekeeper, there was definitely a familial feeling to it, even though it obviously wasn't direct family. So he returned there with his brother every summer, and they would take a road trip through the Mourne Mountains up to Belfast, stopping in Ross Trevor. And, you know, he wrote in his later essays about that idea of the Mourne Mountains being a very mythological place where you could imagine that, you know, there were alternative realities, where you could imagine that giants, dwarves would kind of emerge from this sort of high, misty landscape. And I really feel like if you were to travel there now from, you know, Ross Trevor and the Clockmore Lock, or if you, I can't remember the name of the place now, just outside Newry, Slieve Gullion, if you travel up to those high peaks, it really is quite incredible and awe-inspiring, the different vistas that you can achieve.
And of course, a place that's full of history and full of mythology. And when you think of Yeats's Sligo, you can see how you could talk about C.S. Lewis's County Down and County Louth and County Armagh in much the same type of way. Let's listen to his voice. This is a very rare recording of his voice from the BBC.
Suppose I'm writing a novel. I write. Mary laid down her book. Next moment came a knock at the door. For Mary, who's got to live in the imaginary time of the story, there's no interval between putting down the book and hearing the knock. But I, her creator, between writing the first part of that sentence and the second, may have gone out for an hour's walk and spent the whole hour thinking about Mary.
There you go, the voice of C.S. Lewis. And as you listen to that, as Sarah Keating with me speaking about C.S. Lewis this evening, as you listen to it, I mean, there's clearly no sense of any Irish accent in there. But yet, I think you have picked out a couple of phrases from the book itself that give us a real sense, or phrases that he has used, that give us a real sense of a Hiberno-English quality to some of the writing.
Yeah, but that's it. I don't think it would be unusual for writers of that generation to have that sense of, to have that sense, which to us may sound slightly foreign. But I mean, if you listen to many of those old recordings, you really do, you know, feel that the received accent has changed considerably.
Yeah,
to
and
the
then
modern
even
time.
When you think of, I suppose, the one that we all have heard a million and one times is Yeats reciting "I Will Arise and Go Now" to the Lake Isle of Innisfree.
Exactly,
and it's so high flown and so such a high end delivery. But it the language itself within C.S. Lewis and within the Chronicles of Norway, or of Narnia rather, is there a touch of the Hiberno in there at times?
I'm not sure. I don't have the book in front of me to kind of draw any quotes, but I suppose what, just to reflect what Chris was saying in the previous piece is, I suppose what's really striking about it, you know, 100 years from publication is how, 75 years since publication, is how easily it sits with the modern ear. I mean, it's a really impressive economic piece of storytelling. You know, and I understand that that even people, this idea that it may somehow be a kind of parable for the, for the resurrection of Christ, and that, how even something mentioning that might maybe a turn off to the contemporary reader. But really, it all sits so well within this child's world. I have listened to the book. I have read the book. I have seen adaptations of the book. But I think particularly on reading, what's so impressive is how almost little has to be done to make it palatable in any form, because it's just a really, really tight piece of storytelling.
Yeah, well, I suppose the kind of phrases I was thinking about in that Hiberno-English thing were things like, looks as if butter wouldn't melt in her mouth, I might as well be hanged for a sheep as a lamb, a holy terror and a mountainy man. I mean, straight out of the Hiberno-English dictionary, I would have thought those particular phrases. Sarah Keating, thanks so much for being with us this evening.
Okay, thank you very much, Sean.
That's Sarah Keating there speaking to us about C.S. Lewis. And as I said, that production of The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe continues at the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre in Dublin through until May the 10th. And sure, you could do worse than get a copy of the book as well and have a wee read of that.